Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You can't win anything with kids.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
How much are the players looking forward to Arsene Wenger arriving?
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Phoenix Five Show. Today, there's three of us today. It's not the Phoenix Five, it's three today. We've got Paul McGrath. And we've got David Holland. As you well may have known, lockdown is literally finished. So we've got a couple of lads that are not involved down the pub, obviously, drinking. But we thought we'd still bring you an episode anyway. Euros are playing at the moment. We're well into it. But we thought we could still go into the nostalgia of European Championships and more. So this is literally an off-the-cuff episode. And I think we're going to name it Off the Cuff. So as it's Euros, and it's a 90s and noughties podcast, we're going to start with the Euros. So, we're all born in the 80s. We grew up in the 90s. Our first European tournament would have been the 1992 Euros. And then I don't think many of us have remembered that one. I do personally, but I'm going to start with Paul. Paul, 1992 or 1996, what was your first European tournament you remember, right? And can you tell us a bit about it?
96. I remember being in the White City Club playing football in the back when it was the England-Scotland game. And that was the first one. And then, the England-Scotland game was the first one I remember quite vividly. Mm. And obviously being knocked out soon after against Germany. I remember being in White City Social Club and it was like a, you know, every penalty was bated breath waiting for it. And that was the probably the only tournament that... 2000, between that and 2002, the only tournaments I really cared about. After that, I lost a bit of interest in England. I just felt a bit boring watching international football generally. I think I said it on the last international pod we watched. I'm just not a massive fan of international football. Although watching this tournament, I've watched, I would say, 90% of the games on this one. I've quite enjoyed it more than the normal.
When you say you didn't care about it, is it a case of not caring about the 90s European Championships, or you just wasn't interested, or it just wasn't on the television as much? It wasn't in the papers. Obviously, we didn't have social media in the 90s. Was it a case of not caring, or you just didn't know enough about it? And I'm talking about your 92, your 96, and the 2000. What can you elaborate on that?
96, I don't know. I just wasn't. It was on TV, obviously, but I just never had a massive affinity to watch it. Wasn't something that I was kind of enthralled to watch, and it was generally on the summer, whereas, you know, being a you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 year old, you're out all the time playing, you know, during the summers. You're not indoors watching the game as you are when you're slightly older by choice. You're out on the football pitch playing football or playing run outs or whatever. So at the younger age, I was at 96, was probably what was I then?
It'd have been about 14.
Yeah,
14,
that's when you start really taking in football from about 12 onwards, where you start, you know, Holland, your boy's the same now. How old is Alfie? Is he
He's 10 now. He's 10. It's taking this long to get into it.
Yeah. And he watches it because you watch it with him. Whereas if he was out of the pub, it'll be on now because he's got the bug for it, obviously. But I think years ago, you know, my old man was either working or wasn't really around to watch the game. So I would be out on the street playing football, whatever. Whereas at that age, I was then consciously choosing to watch England for that 96 period.
Yeah. So Dave, I've obviously Paul's pointed at you. What's your first European Championship memory you remember? Was it 92 or 96, or was it further on, mate?
No, I know about 92, but 96 for me, I think I've gone about it before. So my dad's Scottish, as we all know. England, Scotland, he's on one sofa going mad for Scotland. Mm. I'm on the other going mad for England. It was brilliant. I love Euro 96. I think I've said it before. The reason Paul is not interested in England because he's a glory hunter and he only likes to see teams win. And where England don't win nothing, that was him lost interest. And him being Man United, you know, glory hunting. That explains that's Paul in a nutshell. Oh, I tell Hook another thing. I come in yesterday and Alfie's watching the Maradona documentary without me. Downloaded it and was watching it. That's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
No, Euro 96 for me. Euro 96 for me. I loved it. Loved Euro 96.
Did you see that goal?
Who scored?
Tielemans. Absolute. I think it was Tielemans, wasn't it? Absolute.
For Belgium.
Yeah. Absolute cracker.
Sorry, fans. This is an obviously 90s naughty podcast, but Paul's actually commenting on a 2021 live goal. Paul, can you explain the goal for us, please? We're not going to edit it because this is live. What's going on? What's happened, mate?
I don't know. I've got to watch the replay. I think Tielemans taking
that. That's helpful. We don't know.
He sounds like Chris Kamara.
I don't know, Jeff. The ball's come back to the centre. It's been played out on the left-hand side of the box. Tielemans taking two touches. Right foot, Bosch. Bottom right-hand corner of the goalkeeper. He's got no chance.
Lovely. I like that. So what's the score, mate?
1-0 to Belgium. Absolute.
Belgium who? Against who?
Against Portugal.
Lovely. Belgium 1, Portugal 0.
Who scored? I couldn't see who scored it. Hold on. It's not Tielemans.
You said Tielemans, no?
I thought it was, but no, I think it's the other fella.
Oh, my God. Chris Kamara, let's edit this out.
No,
Tielemans has got that in his locker, though. He's done it in the FA
Hazard,
Cup.
It was Torgan Hazard. Torgan Hazard, sorry.
The better Hazard of the two now.
Yeah, the better Hazard of the two now. Absolutely right. Go on, carry on. Sorry, mate.
Anyway, lovely. Yeah, we've had that commentary for the 2021 Euro Championship. That's live, by the way, fans. Let's go back to the 90s and noughties that we're talking about. Back to you, Paul. We briefly spoke about the Euro 96 Championship. It's the first one you remember. Apart from England, what other teams and what other players do you remember from the 96 tournament? Who actually sort of came to your mind and said, wow, he's a fantastic player, and you followed him for their career, i.e. for me, it was like Pavel Nedved for Czech Republic, you know. Dave might be somebody else. Who did you take out of that tournament that you followed basically for the rest of their career?
Yeah, Karol Babulski, obviously won. He had a good tournament. David Sucker had a very good tournament. Stoichkov, how do you pronounce it?
Yes, he's sure Stoichkov for Bulgaria, yeah.
Yeah. Mateus Sam. I mean, yeah, I think that was the first one, again, that you started getting a real... Obviously, watching Football Italia, you knew a lot of the Italian players, but you got a chance to see other players from other countries that weren't in the Premier League. And then, obviously, that summer was really the first summer where you got a lot of people being signed on the back of a tournament. I don't remember any other... Again, I didn't watch a lot of tours before, but I think 96 was the pivotal moment where you had a good Euro, a big club could come in and sign you. And I think that went on... historically for 10 years or so to about 2006, you could have a good 6-game tournament and you'll be signed by a club. And obviously Suka was he top goal scorer in 96? I'm sure he was. Is that right?
As this is off the cuff, I don't know. I do remember scoring a few goals, Paul. So like I said, the viewers can, or the listeners should I say, can correct this. But I do remember him he scored more than two. I think I remember that. But yeah, you're right. Coming to Dave, Paul's mentioned Davor Suka there, Dave. He signed for your club, Arsenal. Do you remember Davor Suka, amongst others, being the sorts of players that you remember from Euro 96 that you follow, thinking they were world-class, etc.?
Yeah, Davor Suka. But when, as soon as you said this, Poborski come to mind. Remember he done that lob? Was it Schmeichel against Denmark? Was it Schmeichel he lobbed?
I think so, yeah, from memory, Dave, I think it was, yeah.
All right, yeah, so he popped into my head, but then he wasn't great at United. Paul will argue that he was all right, because we've had this before. But yeah, he come off the back of it. I remember the England games and stuff, and I remember, you know, England playing Holland and stuff like that. Clivert being good. I think Clivert scored against Scotland to put them out. And things like that. So,
yeah, it was Portugal, Dave. The lob, it's against Portugal. He lobbed Victor Baye.
Yeah, I did think that, because, I mean, Schmeichel's made every team we've ever put in. He couldn't have got lobbed like that. No way. I loved Euro 96, but we went back and watched it, didn't we, during the first lockdown and stuff. And when you watch it back, I would have rather not watched it back, because I liked the memories I had of it as a child, because you watch things differently, football differently as a grown-up. You know, so I like the nostalgia part of it.
Great.
For me, Euro 96 will always be the tournament of tournaments for me. I don't think it'll never be top for me. I know you can go back and say England didn't play great football against Switzerland in the first game, but when we beat Holland 4-1, that was amazing. That was fucking amazing. And like I say, when you're a kid, it's everything to your football. So that's why for me, Euro 96 will never be beaten.
Dave, do you think then, because obviously the Euros are on now, do you think England have progressed since Euro 96 to now?
I think they're the same. I think it's all expectation and nothing ever comes of it. Now, I was thinking about England as it is now, and I say it's always England on paper for me. England on paper should have done this. The so-called generation, England on paper, but they never do. And you look at Germany now, you can't name one world-class player in their team as we speak now, but they're a team and it ain't about one player. And this is the thing. You've got all your Fodens, Grealish, they're going to do all this and they're going to do all that. And you know, they're not, let's get it. They're not going to win this Euros. And it's just, and in 10 years time, we're still doing the Phoenix Five. We'll be in our 50s. And we'll be just talking about this team as we did any other England team. You look it on paper, brilliant, but nothing ever comes of it.
But do you think the style of football, in terms of the progression of football, how they play football, Graham, this is to you as well. Do you think England have progressed as a footballing team from 96 to 2018 or 2021? Sorry.
Okay. All right. Let me keep it brief, obviously, because I'm hosting today. No, we haven't, because you haven't won anything. So it's irrelevant. So, Dave, as this is off the cuff, let's move on swiftly. Dave, you did mention Schmeichel, because we're going to go into loads of topics here, because it literally is off the cuff of a 90s and noughties podcast. Dave, you mentioned Schmeichel there for Denmark. Let's get into it. Let's get into Schmeichel. You and Paul are vital to this podcast. You have a lot of arguments, especially about the gigs and Overmars thing. Let's talk about Schmeichel. Peter Schmeichel, Denmark goalkeeper, Manchester United goalkeeper in the 90s, probably classed as one of the best in the world, if not the best in the world. We've had Seaman, Taffarel mentioned in the past. Can we give us your view, Dave, in world football, not just Premier League, in world football, where do you class Peter Schmeichel in one of the best of world football?
I hate Peter Schmeichel for obvious reasons. Ian Wright used to have pure beef with him. He was just a pain in the arse for anyone other than a Man United fan. But I can't take away the fact that he was quality. I have to, you know, if we're going to talk on this sort of thing and do opinions, I can't be so biased to say not be able to tell the truth. He was a brilliant goalkeeper.
In class of what? In class of the Premier League or world football? Was he class in the Premier League or the world?
I would say he was world class, but it's very difficult to say world football when you're talking about Denmark. You know, like he's not playing in a world class. He's world class, but he's not playing a world class team that are going to. I know they won Euro 92. Don't get me wrong, but you're not talking to the Brazils of the world or the Argentinas of the world. If he's playing in them teams, he's getting spoken about. I mean, he gets spoken about world class anyway, but he'll be spoken about differently, in my opinion. The fact that he plays for Denmark, people won't throw him in the world class bracket because they say, well, their team's not world class. You see what I mean? But I say he's a world class goalkeeper. He goes down as an all time great, without doubt.
Lovely. Paul, do you take issue with that? Seeing as Dave says world class in Denmark, obviously talking about the 90s, Denmark did win the Euro 92. Do you take issue with that? Because they did win it. Schmeichel was a pivotal part. Was he not captain? I can't remember off the cuff. Was he captain? Was he a big part of that Euro 92 win?
I don't know if he was captain, but he was part of the team and they won it. So I don't, you know, I don't buy into this whole international side of things. Oh, you have to do it at your club, sorry, at your country. Because that, you know, you look at someone that plays at Scotland or an Egypt or something like that. So what, they're never going to be classed as world class. Egypt aren't really realistic going to win a World Cup, are they? So would you say that Mo Salah isn't world class or whoever it would be? It helps if you're the top player in, and you play for a big club like a big country like Brazil or Argentina or Spain or Italy, then I think it becomes more important because
you're playing
for a club that should be winning or competing. So I've never been a fan of, and again, of the international side of things, it doesn't really do it for me. I think if I think we spoke about Pelé before in the past about how great Pelé was supposed to have been. Did he do it outside of Brazil? No. Did he do it in Brazil for Brazil? Yes. But what? So that makes him world class because he done it on what, 20 games? How many games in a World Cup when he won it? 6 games, 8 games, if that.
I get that. Yeah. I agree. You're spot on, mate. Just for a second before we move on, obviously off the cuff, let's stick with that. We stick with the Schmeichel thing. I love this because you and Dave are here today, and you're big rivals of Arsenal, Manchester United, certain players. So, Paul, I'm going to ask you, and I want Dave to chip in after. We're talking about world class goalkeepers. We've had a discussion in the past: Taffarel, Oliver Kahn, Peruzzi, certain goalkeepers. In your opinion, Paul, let's get this down. Let's nail this, okay? Let's nail this before we move on to our next season of the Phoenix Five. In your opinion, from the 1990s to the 1999 period, who was the best goalkeeper in world football? In your personal opinions, put your bias aside. Who was the best you ever saw that made world-class save? You thought, hang on a minute, there's nobody better than this guy. You answer, and then I want Dave to take over.
Well, it'd be Schmeichel, wouldn't it? I've picked him twice, so I can't go against Schmeichel.
Is there no one? Is there no one else, though, Paul? I know you watch Man United on the telly, but is there no one else?
Oliver Kahn, in terms of, was a good goalkeeper at Bayern Munich.
I think was slightly better than good, to be honest, Paul. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. In world football, let's be honest.
He's world class. But I've always, again, I've seen Schmeichel play 150 times. I've seen Kahn play 22, maybe. So I'm only going from what other people are telling me.
What you've seen, yes, I understand that.
So it's impossible. Same as Holland. If he had an argument for Seaman, as an example, because obviously he's seen him for that period, and it's hard. I can't disagree with him because he would have seen Seaman more than me. But I would say then you would look at, I know you have stats, but then you'd look at, okay, what they've won over their careers, what have they performed internationally. Then you can bring in other parts of it, and it's just an opinion at the end of the day. I think,
of course.
You know, and that's Schmeichel for me would be, as I've said twice before, would be number one.
Dave.
Yeah, I've got no. Like I say, I can't argue with that. Like I say, Paul is biased, no matter what he says. He was always going to say Schmeichel and say no one else.
I've said I'm biased because it's a bias because you watch someone more than anyone else. You're going to have a biased side of it, and I've always stated that. I've never said and hid behind being non-biased.
Yeah, well, we know that because that's what you're like on every episode. Like I say, Schmeichel, Seaman, Kahn, Peruzzi. Would it have been Casillas? Would he have been around in the 90s? Who would have been around Madrid's goalkeeper in the 90s? Casillas in the 90s, was he?
Yes, he was. Yeah, he was. Especially mid to late 90s.
Yeah, he'd be late 90s.
Okay, then,
yeah.
Dave, let's ask the question, okay? If you was picking a World 11, which obviously off the cuff, that's a fantastic, because we're going to get onto that because you had a rant about that before. But before we get onto that, if you was picking your best World 11 from 1990 to 1999, World 11, Dave, not Premier League or Europe, your World 11. Who would you put number one, mate?
What, in goal?
Yeah, in goal, yeah.
Not Schmeichel.
No, who would you put number one?
I'd put Kahn ahead of Schmeichel. Mm-hmm. I'd put Oliver Kahn. Like I say, Man United, I didn't see it's like you say, it's off the cup. But that Champions League final that they played Bayern Munich, was that the only time Bayern Munich got into the Champions League final in the 90s?
Yeah.
And then
from memory, it's obviously off the cuff. So everyone can correct this on it.
You know what it is? What I say is more for. I'm gonna say Kahn because I know Paul doesn't like to talk about internationals, but I'm gonna say because of the internationals, Germany internationally were machines anyway. Like I say, you say what you want about them, they turn up at tournaments, and Oliver Kahn would be a big part of that.
Yeah.
And so for me, I would say they're fairly even club wise, but you know, if I've got to tip the balance, I'll tip in the balance because of internationals.
But do you not think they're very similar goalkeepers anyway? You're just picking one over the other. It's both big, both loud.
No,
both...
I disagree. I think Kahn was a lot smaller than Schmeichel, Paul, to be honest.
Who?
I think Kahn's slightly smaller than Schmeichel. They're very big, as in that, you know, they used to put their arms out, put their legs out. Yeah, so. Hard one, isn't it? It's a very hard one. I think from memory, obviously it's off the cuff. Forget, don't start Googling stuff because this is an off the cuff episode. I just remember Kahn being slightly a short goalkeeper, certainly like Taffarel. Do you remember Kahn being short? Do you remember being a big commanding goalkeeper, Dave?
I agree with what you're saying. I would say off memory that Schmeichel, in my memory, would have had a bigger presence.
He was quite tall, wasn't he?
Yeah. They were both gobshites. That we can both agree on that. But, you know, but off the top of my head, I would say that Schmeichel was the bigger guy. But like I say, it's difficult because when you're comparing world class against world class, it's very difficult to split them.
And this is why I need to move on now to the next subject. Obviously, we haven't had a podcast with you on it the last couple of weeks. Obviously, you've been busy for personal reasons. We understand that. We're back on it now, and we're doing off the cuff. And you brought me to the attention when me, Paul, and Lee Harper done our world-class 11 of the 90s. We had a WhatsApp conversation with certain players that were involved that you weren't happy about. I mentioned some of them, and I want you to discuss them. Obviously, Paul McGrath, not our normal host, Paul McGrath, legendary. He was involved. The actual Aston Villa and Manchester United centre-back. But Mark Overmars, from your Arsenal side, we had David Beckham involved, Roy Keane. You wasn't happy about the 11, Dave. Can you elaborate on what you weren't happy about? But can you start on the Mark Overmars team? Because I find it quite strange, as you as an Arsenal fan, you weren't happy about that, mate.
I'm not unhappy with him being in. I've calmed down, so you may not get the same rant you was going to get the day I listened to it. Because that was just natural. But I've calmed down since. But I feel like Paul McGrath got away with murder knowing that I wasn't there by some of the players that he was putting in. He knows that if he had put them players in and I was in, he would have got a reaction from hell. So he got away with it. Mm. I just can't see how every 11 we do, them three players are in it.
Okay.
Now, there's an argument to say that they are, because at the time they were, you know, for the themes that we were doing, Champions League, but there was 10 Champions Leagues in that season. Man United got in that decade. Man United got to one final, and yet every time we do something like that, Beckham and fucking Keane get in.
Dave, to interrupt. Are those the players you've got an issue with? Keane and Beckham.
No. Because the last couple of 11s we've done as well, Overmars got in, which is why I mentioned it as well. I didn't want to be so Man United heavy and just hammer Paul for the Man United players, so I threw in an Overmars. To be fair.
Fair enough. Paul, Sorry, Dave. Come on.
I just feel like we could have put... I mean, now, don't ask me to name players because it's off the cuff.
Yes, the cuff,
that's what I know that was what was coming next, what's going to be in place of them. But I just feel that, you know, there must be other players out that we could argue over. There was a lot of Champions League finals in 10 years and things like that.
Yeah, but how many of them Champions League finals did you watch, realistically? Come on.
Paul, I want Paul to have his say. I just wanted to add, it was the World 11, not Champions League 11. We've done Champions League 11. I think Dave's issue was the World 11. Paul, who did you put in for left wing, mate? I can't remember. I had Nedved. I can't remember who did you put, Paul?
I can't remember.
Vigo, was it?
He put in Paul McGrath. The
no, Ronald, I think it was Rivaldo Paul put in.
Rivaldo I put in, yeah.
Yeah. So can going to Paul.
Yeah, you've got a case for Rivaldo. I can have Rivaldo.
Yeah, he made the side, but he didn't make the left wing. I love it when you two, your chemistry together. Okay, I'm going to go to Paul now. Dave's an Arsenal fan. He's not happy with Mark Overmars being put in the 90s side all the time. Paul, can you mention any better left wing players in the 90s? There's one that begins with G. you might get onto, but go on, take it away. What's his issue? Do you know?
I don't know. I like Overmars. So, you know, I think he just said that to try and balance it out. But as I said in the first one we did, we've done the first 11, and everyone's went in, I said a few things, and then I came back and retracted it in the future pod because I said, actually, no, he was phenomenal. I think he's worth a place in that team, definitely.
I'm not saying he isn't. I'm not saying the players you put in aren't what you say they are. I'm just saying is that we're talking about the world, and yet these two, we're in the Champions League, and they're in the world one. And so we've widened the scope of players we can use, and they're still getting in. Like, don't get me wrong, they were good, but where they, you know, I know you're going to say Keane, but for me, I've got, you know, Keane, I can accept Keane to an extent.
You got some valid points there, mate. So we spoke about London clubs. Actually, viewers, this was Dave Holland's idea. Unfortunately, he wasn't with us. Me and Paul covered it. We had some good feedback about it. It was great. Dave, we're going to London clubs. We'd love your input. Me and Paul spoke a lot about Arsenal and Tottenham. Arsenal in the 90s, very successful under George Graham. Obviously, Paul's a massive George Graham, not a massive George Graham fan, but he's a bigger George Graham fan than Arsenal, than Arsene Wenger, should I say. I think I've asked this question to you before. This is literally off the cuff, because I don't know what I'm saying, but Arsene Wenger or George Graham in the 90s, 1-0 to Arsenal, obviously. But success-wise, who do you think was more successful, mate, during that 1990 to 1999 period under your club?
I can't disagree with what Paul's. I prefer Arsene Wenger. I prefer the way he plays football. But, you know, like, winning's winning, don't get me wrong. And I said about this 1-0 to the Arsenal stuff. I'm not a fan of defensive football. Mourinho, I can't stand the way he plays football. Paul does like all that stuff, which is fair enough. So I prefer Wenger. But in the 90s, we won an FA Cup and league in 98. George Graham won the Cup Winners' Cup, and then was in the final the year after. I would say in the 90s, I could agree. Probably he was more successful in that decade than Wenger. So I can't disagree with that. But I still prefer Wenger because of the way he played football. He changed the way football was played in England for the better for me. I can't disagree that in the 90s. Overall, I would say Wenger was more successful. But in that period, I would say that Graham edges it purely for the European trophy.
Hey,
Do you think Wenger should have left earlier, Dave? Do you think 2000, maybe 2009, 2010? I think PSG came in from, Barcelona came in from, maybe Real Madrid as well. Do you think he should have gone on A, to test himself somewhere else, and B, do you think Arsenal would have then been able to attract a better caliber of manager, and you would have stayed challenging?
See, the thing, I always had an issue with the Wenger out thing, because I never once said it, and because purely better the devil you know, and you've got to be careful what you wish for, and what, you know, he's gone. I know he left us in a bit, you know, in the squad in a bit of a state, and we've not really recovered, but no one's really come in and set the world alight, have they? But going back to your question, you say he should have gone, but you see some of the teams that he... I know you say, Champions League, fourth place, and Arsenal treat it like a trophy, and they more or less did. But he got us... You see some of the squads that he got Arsenal into the top four it's amazing. Some of the players in them squads, honestly... If Arteta's got them players now, we are fighting relegation. That's hindsight's a wonderful thing. And should he have gone? Maybe, but he did. He loved them. I mean, I say he loved the club. He was most highest paid manager ever. So that, you know, that might have kept him there. But yeah, you know, the last few years it was torrid for him. So. You never say it, but maybe he thought he should have jumped.
Okay, so let's move on to the next thing off the cuff. Keeping it 90s. Paul, I'm going to start with you. What's not your best memory? What's your first memory of any 90s football tournament you remember, i.e. World Cups, Euros, FA Cup, League Cup? What's your first memory, mate?
Of tournament? It'd be Euro 96 in terms of the... the tournament that I really, as I said, engaged in. But outside of that, yeah, I don't know. I think 94 to 96 when I started really getting into football. So it's kind of, I was always, you know, playing it, but not watching it as much at that stage. Obviously, we came to school and we watched the Match of the Days and watched the Serie A. But in terms of tournament, as I said, I don't remember much about I remember having the Italian, is it Italian 90? I remember having some replica, the football.
Yeah.
I remember USA 94, but just sporadically, I couldn't tell you much about it, but I remember...
Do you remember a particular side or a particular player or players that you that stuck in your memory back then? You think, oh, bloody hell, he was good. And it actually got you the vibe into football?
No, not really. No? I can't remember if anyone off the top of my head. No, I think it was more we played it really and watched it. And then again, if we was researching it, and you'll probably come across names and think, oh, yeah, I forgot about him. But not off the top of my head, I would say no, not probably not.
Dave, same question to you. What's your earliest memory of football on the TV, i.e. World Cups, European Championship, FA Cups or League Cups even? And something you watched on the telly, you thought, oh, blimey, I love this. I remember him, her, not so her, sorry, not her, but I remember, you know what I mean? Go on, take it off me, mate.
I remember when Arsenal won the Cup Winners' Cup, Alan Smith scored 1-0. I'm sure it was a header. I've never seen it since, but I've always remembered it. And then the year after that, that's when Seaman got done, Naeem from the halfway line. But I remember USA 94. And I can, the most famous player, I think, not say famous, the most recognised player from USA 94 would be Carlos Valderrama.
Just
for his hair. But also Taffarel, because he had a bald head, didn't he? He had hairline.
That was Ravelli from Sweden. Thomas Ravelli had the bald head. Taffarel had the full head of hair.
Taffarel had the bald head as well, with a bit missing on the top, no? Have I got that a bit wrong?
Possibly. This is off the cuff. You might be right, Dave. I'm not going to correct you, but he possibly. But I know he had some hair.
I may have it wrong.
I
definitely messed up Valderrama. He was the most remembered player from there, off the top of your head. Everyone remembers Valderrama, don't they?
So you said that name, and I wouldn't have remembered that. But now you've said it, and the minute you said it, I was like, oh, yeah, definitely, 100% remember that. 100%. Yes, he was, yeah. He was the first kind of in our era who set a style, I reckon, or like a familiar face, whereas you knew him because of what he's done, like just the look of him. Yeah, yeah, good shout that one, Holland. Good shout.
Also remember from USA 94, Maradona being off his absolute beak, running into the camera when he scored. And his fucking pupils were like saucers. And then he got sent home, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Yeah, it's a major, that was a major thing, yeah.
Because I'll tell you why, because they were refurbing this Cleverley estate at that time. And we got moved into another flat on the estate it might have been a year or so. And I remember that the highlights for USA 94 were on late. And I had the TV in the room and I used to watch some of the highlights before I went to bed to come to school. The reason I remember that is because we wasn't living in our normal flat. I've been in number 20 for all my life. But for 6 months or whatever it was, we were moved out. And it was at USA 94, which is why I remember it. It's weird the things you remember, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Did your mum and dad tell you it was like a holiday? And then you just, it was like two doors down, they went, oh, Dave, we're going on holiday. Pack your bag.
I was so poor that I never got holidays, Paul. So, you know, it did feel like a holiday as it goes. We moved across the estate.
brilliant.
That was actually, you say that, Dave, that was actually the summer was between the, from our primary school to secondary school. That's why I remember it. That's why it's my first ever World Cup. Remember, I've stated in our last or second from last podcast about George Hadji. He was a player I first remember being obsessed with in that World Cup. Remember Valderrama? Let's stick with Valderrama for a bit. I'll stick with you, Dave. Do you remember Valderrama as being a great player? Because he was a good player from my memory. Do you remember him as a great player? Or do you just remember him from his hair? His hairstyle. I don't remember being a great player at all.
It was purely for his hair. We were kids at the time. Yeah. He had this big, massive blonde afro. And for kids, they were like, bloody hell, look at him. And so it's purely for his hair. I couldn't tell you a single thing he'd done with a ball. I just know his hair from a mile off.
Well, he was the mirror. He played in America. He was the first, he was a Colombian playing in America at the American tournament, wasn't he? So it's obviously USA 94. And he was actually a relevant player playing for Colombia. I mean, one of the only players, really, that was a non-USA player playing on the world stage. And then, obviously, his look was quite idolized because of it. So he, I might be wrong, but I think he really gave the USA soccer scene a lift because he was a decent player for Colombia in midfield. So playing for on the world stage, you know, where's he playing? It's the MLS at the time. I think he was one of the first players. If you think MLS football, he's now one of the first players that a lot of people think of about superstar players, so to speak, who went over to the MLS in their career. But yeah, I can't remember much about him, as you said. But I think if you're talking about like leaving a statement on MLS football, I think he was quite important to that, their brand awareness almost.
Okay. Yeah, I like that, Paul. You probably it now in the head there, mate. I do remember literally what you said. I remember being a good player. I don't remember being a great player. But as you're talking about USA 94, here's a question for you. I'll continue with you, Paul. During the 99 period, you can use the USA 94 as a template, if you like. Who would you say your favourite player was during that 90s decade outside of Europe? That's a question for you. Outside of Europe. So forget the Premier League. Forget Serie A, the Spanish League, Portuguese League, etc. Who would you have said during that 10-year period, or 9-year period, so to say, 1990 to 1999, who would you have said, well, actually, world-class, I would have loved him, because obviously you've been a Manchester United fan, I would have loved him on my side. Who would you have said you're the best player, off the cuff, you thought was the best player in the 1990s, mate?
Well, again, it's limited.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
It is, because you're limiting... you know, who I can...
Personally, I'd go for a Brazilian player or Argentinian. Though.
Well, I would say in terms of... Seeing, it's got to be someone who played for Real Madrid or Barcelona, like a Rivaldo, Ronaldinho, players like that, or, you know, Ronaldo, as in Brazilian Ronaldo. Players like that we've seen highlights of. But I would probably say a lot of those have been highlights I saw in later. Not necessarily my memories wouldn't serve me from that period, because... Yeah. You don't appreciate what you appreciate then to now, you know, or when you're in your prime. So when I was 20 and really into football, and YouTube wasn't around, but you could still get the videos, you know, of things, and Sky Sports was showing highlight reels of other players and stuff. So then you all of a sudden you pick that period up where you're thinking, oh, okay, God, he was that good. He was amazing. So it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one. But yeah, I would say someone like a Rivaldo, Ronaldinho. Were fantastic players I would like to have seen.
Dave?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Paul said. I don't think you can look past R9 in the 90s. I think R9, you know, I know we go on about him a lot. He's another one. He's the World 11s. It's very difficult not to put him in. But yeah, no, R9's got to be he's one of the best strikers, if not the best striker in the world. So it's very hard to say. But I have looked at Mark. I like the Hadji shout. I like Stoichkov as well. Those type of players. You know, so, but yeah, for me, it's got to be R9. Zidane as well, but like Paul said, Zidane come on late. France had some good players as well, especially talking them in that 98 World Cup, that you had Jul Kayevs, you had all them lot. There's loads of players you could rattle off. So there were some good ones. The early 90s are difficult because we were so young. So we get to 96 to 2000. You know, that's when you get the most out of us. But there's numbers of players. But R9's got been the best player we've ever seen in that period.
Definitely stick it. Yeah, love. I haven't really had much of an input. More of a question answer today. Dave, we're doing unedited, but I'm going to say I'm the guy asking the questions.
Fucking hell.
Right, okay then, Dave, as you was continuing there, I asked you, but sit off the cuff, what's the best football ground you've ever been for atmosphere? Right, don't misquote me, for atmosphere, not for how the stadium looks. Obviously, in today's football, you look at Tottenham as an arena, you think, wow, magnificent, etc. Yeah. Forget that. Atmosphere. What is the best ground you've ever been to? And it's just a basic 90s. It's from the 90s up until present day. I'm stretching further afield. What's the best atmosphere you've ever been to, mate?
It won't be Highbury. Them calling it the library.
No, like, I can agree with that. I've been there myself. It was boring.
The old library. I'd never be able to look anyone in the face if I come on this podcast and said the library. Celtic Park. I mentioned the game before. Celtic, I've never seen anything like it. And I said to you before, it was only Falkirk who they played against.
I have never ever seen anything like it in my life.
That's really weird, isn't it? So you say Falkirk, that's how passionate they take it.
This is what I mean. They can get up for anything. It was Celtic versus Arsenal in a friendly. I said it before when I took my dad, and they were the same at a friendly. They were the same at a friendly. They've got the best fans in the world. And that was just the best thing I've ever seen.
Fantastic. Paul?
For me, White Hart Lane, I think. I've been to Old Trafford a few times, and it's had good nights there, but I've never been to like one of the top games there. I've never seen like an Arsenal United at United or an Arsenal Liverpool, so that the atmosphere might beat it. But I've been to Spurs quite a bit, and I must say, in the old White Hart Lane, I've saw them play Chelsea, Arsenal, Man United, and then versus Chelsea, the atmosphere in that ground was electric. So that was my best football ground. It's also because it's quite intimate, quite small, and you're 20 or 30 or 1,000 people, and it did feel like 60, 70,000 people. And I think that's a very important part of the atmosphere. So yeah, I would say White Hart Lane for me.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to say, like, because obviously before I moved up to the West Midlands, I was a Fulham season ticket holder. I used to go home and away. Old Trafford was very quiet until they scored, and the roar was massive. I mean, it's nothing. I've never heard anything as loud as that. Yeah. But for atmosphere, I went to Portals of Fulham. I think it was like 2003, 2004. Before I moved up to the West Midlands, we were both mid-table. We had nothing to play for. I was sitting in the away end. Fratton Park, obviously, old ground, tight ground. And they started singing from as soon as the ball was kicked. I think, well, you've got nothing to sing for. It's a bit weird. And they sung and they sung and they sung. Obviously, the Fulham fans were there. They started us singing. It's normally the away fans started singing. And the atmosphere for 90 minutes was electric. And we both had nothing to play for. And when I spoke to people in the past and recently, I speak to them, they frown at me. And I say, no. You're misunderstanding me. I'm talking about the atmosphere, not the ground itself. That's a different conversation. The atmosphere. The atmosphere was electric. Fratton Park, Portsmouth was absolutely brilliant. I went on my own. My old man didn't want to come that day. I wish he did, to be fair. It's one of the best atmospheres for a sort of a non-game. Do you know what I mean? It was a sort of not even a 3 point. It was just a game that if they won, if we won, it meant nothing. It was a fantastic atmosphere. I really enjoyed it.
Dave,
go on.
I have to totally agree. I've been to Fratton Park, and I went with my granddad for West Ham versus Portsmouth. Mm. And I totally agree with everything you said. They were brilliant. Remember that big tattooed fucker who bangs the drum with the top
off? Yeah. I remember him, yeah.
You could spot him a mile away from there.
I think he starts it all, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Amazing atmosphere.
It was amazing. So I agree with what you're saying there. I just went there as a neutral. I was up there, and it was a...
It was, Dave. It was the best atmosphere. We're not talking grounds, because that's another issue. But that atmosphere, amazing. But talking about, let's go on to grounds. We're all born in West London. Me and Paul done this episode not so long ago. I lived the furthest away from you three. It's only a 10-minute walk. But obviously, Dave, you lived about a 10-minute walk. If that, Paul lived a 2-minute walk. Let's talk about QPR.
We have to.
Because it's off the cuff, I'm the host. Let's talk about QPR. the ground is so close to the players. It's so tight. Paul, you mentioned, you said, do we have to? Do you think it makes a difference? Because QPR, I think it's like an 19,000 capacity. When it's rammed, it's a fantastic atmosphere. Do you
I don't think it's got a great atmosphere in QPR. I've been quite...
Okay, go on, explain.
But I do get the small ground thing and being close to the pitch and all that stuff. I do get it, but... I've never been to QPR, and again, I'm not a QPR fan, so I might be turning out of turn, but I've never felt like there's more than what there's in the ground there. It's 13,000 capacity. It feels like it's...
No, it's not. It's not 13,000 capacity. It tells about 18,000,
19,000. Well, 18,000, that's what it feels like. I've never been to a game that's felt like it's 40,000, 50,000, 60,000 people in attendance.
We're not going to if it holds 19,000, are you? That's
well, no, you go to some grounds, and there's small grounds, and you can look around, there'll be 30,000 people, where it could feel like 60,000 or 90,000 people because the stadium, the way it's laid out. You can go to the Emirates now. What's the capacity there, Dave? Is it 56,000 at the Emirates?
60,000.
And it feels like about 30,000 people are in there. So
Yeah, but them old ground, these new grounds are like that. Like, that's what I miss the old grounds. I miss all these old grounds. QPRs, the old stadiums. Your Fulhams,
when it's full, Dave. When QPRs, it's full.
Yeah, you can't beat them when you're close to the pitch and all that. Like West Ham's new stadium, they've got a running track around it. Fuck off! Like they're playing crowd noise in and all this crap. It's crap.
Okay, Dave's made a fantastic point there, and I'll stay with you, Dave. I'd have thought about this the other day, obviously, staying off the cuff, obviously, viewers. Tottenham Hotspur's new stadium, structure, not so much architect, because it's literally off the catalogue to me. If you want to extend it, you go off the roof. But it is an amazing stadium in 2021. For atmosphere, for intensity, for intimidation, if you like, here's a question for you, Dave. This is for Dave for the moment. As a player, Dave, as if you was a professional player, forget the jokes, etc., would you have rather played at Tottenham Hotspur's new ground, away from all the fans, the shit atmosphere, which it is, let's be fair, you can't swear anymore, there's all lots of things that go with it, or would you have rather played at a ground like, I don't know, the old Den, where it was caged off, the fans, a packed old Den, might I say, a packed old Den, where it's close to the ground, the intimidation, the swearing, everything that goes with it, you know, the fear factor, the wanting to score, the passion, the emotion. Take it from there, Dave. What would you have preferred? That's just an example. The old Den, not new Den, the old Den or Tottenham Hotspur, the new Tottenham Hotspur. What would you rather have played at, mate, from your personal experience?
Well, you all know that I'm double R, so I'd go into the Lions Den and have it. you've got these pampered players today. They want to be playing in the stadiums they're playing in, where there's no fear factor, and nothing to worry about.
No, but I asked you, not me.
No, I would like to play. I like the old stadiums. We're brought up game, in the 80s when the men were men and all that, a proper tackle and all that stuff. I'd want to be playing there where it's all going around you. It's close to you. You know, I don't think no one's going to get hurt, but you know, like the fans are right up on you. A lot of the real fans can't even afford to go to the stadiums these days. It's full of all corporate stuff, which is what these stadiums are built for. Paul's touched on it before. He's into all the financial side of it, but that's what it's bought for. And but no, for me, it's got to be the old style stadiums. I miss them, like I say, and. I know everyone's got to move with the times and stuff like that, but football's not the same with a bit like that. So all these teams that haven't had their grounds redone, like your Fulhams and your QPRs, and teams like that.
Well, Fulhams is being done now. Fulhams is being done now with a fucking swimming pool on the roof.
Go on, Paul, take over.
What's their capacity going to be?
Yeah, same question to you.
I'm not too sure. Yeah, the old one's much better. There's no doubt about that. I think, you know, but what Dave said was right. I know you said you're asking us, but in terms of the players, I think it is a thing. The players now would rather play in the grounds because it's about the spectatorship or the vastness and looking around and soaking in that massive stadium that they're playing in when they used to play in the park. Whereas back in the day, you wanted to play in the Lions Den, you wanted to prove yourself and you wanted to get one over on the fans. And, you know, Adebayor is a more modern one I would use. You know, Adebayor, he ran half the way up this pitch, wasn't it? Was he Spurs at the time, Dave?
No, he was at City.
Left Man City, wasn't he?
He was at City and he ran all the way up the other end of the pitch, you know?
Yeah.
Imagine him trying to do that if that was like, a Millwall ground or something like that. It's... You've got that protection almost now that you know there's nothing going to really happen. But back in the day, you didn't know. It did feel like, oh, and you did up your game, I would imagine, because you wanted to make sure that the fans weren't on your back from the minute you kicked the ball. So, yeah, modern grounds, again, football moved on. So it changes to that now. The modern grounds are for modern footballers and for modern fans. And it looks better on TV than it does going to a dilapidated, you know, Craven Cottage and looking at that overhead on the cameras and the VAR, trying to get cameras in positions in these older grounds is more difficult. So yeah, that's one for me. I would say definitely the older stadiums.
Yeah, no, so like I say, Alfie put on an old the Arsenal game in '98. He downloaded it on Sky today when Arsenal had to beat Everton at Highbury, and that's when Tony added, you know, the statue. When he does it, he does the statues outside where he stands up there, scores the winner.
I was at the Springbok, scored that goal.
And it showed that obviously it was at Highbury, and that's what makes me, you know, I do miss that. I would like to have gone there to Highbury now as an adult, you know, like, because I only went there as a kid.
Yeah.
And then took it in that way. But like I say, I feel like, you know, like, it's, I mean, it's never going to happen. But they should try and keep the tradition when they're building these stadiums, but they're not going to, are they? When they have,
well, to be fair to Spurs, I must say, they built theirs and they had people come in, I'm sure from Dortmund, because they wanted to recreate the yellow wall that Dortmund have at White Hart Lane. I haven't been to a new stadium. I've been to a new stadium, but I haven't been when it's like again a top game. And I think you've got that. They've tried to recreate that atmosphere there. So obviously, there's been no fans in the ground for the last 18 months. So we won't know fully yet if that's been replicated or not. But we are running out of time, Graham. Well, Graham, just quickly, I think we're going to do. I was just saying to Holland before you came back on. This is like the end of the season now kind of episode. So we've kind of gone over some old episodes, which has been
okay.
Here.
Yeah.
So maybe we just talk about old interviews we've done, our favourite interviews we've done, or a bit more on the flops, or a bit more on them.
Okay, that's great. Okay, then. So we'll start with you, Paul. You've mentioned it. Talk about the season before we got onto our quiz, our end of season quiz. Episodes, players, interviews. What's been your favourite moment of the season so far then?
Do you know what? I mean, we started the pod, when was it, in March? Was that, am I thinking that right?
Like that, yeah.
No, January. We started the pod in January. So February, March, April, May, June, July, August. No, January, February, March, April, May, June. So in 6 months, we've had, you know, nearly 24 episodes, including guests, maybe a few more. And we've grown quite quickly. And some of the guests we've had have been really, really good. I think my favourite guest still, and we've got obviously this is the end of the two seasons now. We've had other guest interviews that we haven't posted yet, and they will be coming up over the next couple of weeks. But my favourite one's still been Robbie Musto. I think that's been my highlight in terms of star power. In terms of when you look at someone and think, "Fucking hell, we've got, you know, absolute legend." I think Nigel Winterburn was really good as well. But we've been very lucky because I think everyone that we've interviewed have all been really good, and I think they're all part of 90s football culture almost. There's not many players that you an average fan that knew football in the 90s, if you said Ralph Fox, chances are they're going to know who he was. Robbie Musto.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely. Yeah.
You know, they're quite decent names, and everyone's been very kind to give us a lot of time, and we've been very fortunate. So I enjoyed the Robbie Musto one from the ones that have been posted the most, but then also enjoyed the Stephen Encho one. I thought that was quite insightful. Yeah, so I've enjoyed all of them. I think there hasn't been really an episode that I haven't enjoyed that we've done. And again, we've only been going for less than 6 months, and I think we've done it incredibly well. As lockdown has eased, it's been more and more challenging to edit it and to get us all together in a room, all five of us, and then the Euros are on and things like that. So obviously we're taking a break now till sort of September time when winter sets back in and everyone's a bit more calm and hopefully a bit more settled. But yeah, and I've enjoyed all of them very, very much so.
Dave, before we move on to me, your favourite moment of the series so far, mate?
Yeah, it's Nigel Winterburn. I was sort of starstruck with it. You know, like, Paul's been trying to get a Man United player, and we nearly got Brian Robson, didn't we, Paul?
Yeah.
And I'm sure he would have been starstruck if he had him on there, you know. But it's just, it was, you know, like, we do questions, but because when you got a player in your team, you know, who I grew up with, I didn't need it because you could just remember stuff and just rat. It was brilliant. It was really, really good. But yeah, I agree with Paul. Robbie Musto was, I liked the Stephen Honcho one. You could have a laugh with him. Mm. But the one, well, it hasn't come out yet. But Tony DiRigo mugging me off—that's broke my heart. But it sort of when, obviously I wasn't at the Brian Dean one, and when he done you up, Graham, he said when you called him Dean. Yeah. So it sort of softened the blow when Tony DiRigo comes out and goes, "How many caps did you get?" So, but no, like what Paul said, for us to just be messaging them and them coming back and saying to us, yeah, and it's been amazing for the only few months that we've done it, and we managed to get on probably what 8 guests. And like you say, at Alfie's Football, I tell some of the dads there, and I rattled off Ralph Fox, and they're like, "Oh yeah, yeah, I remember him," you know, like, and things like it's just been brilliant. Yeah, love doing it, and hopefully we'll come back in September or October, whenever you boys want to do it, and we'll give it another bash. And see if we can get some more guests on. Yeah, no, it's been great.
Lovely. I'll put my pen in. Yeah. I think my favourite, it's got to be Ralph Fox. Really, because he was the first guest we ever had on. He was a big coup for us. I mean, I've got to give Paul all the credit. he done all the hard work. Paul McGrath did. He found Roald Fox. Roald Fox agreed to come on, and it was just a lovely bloke. For me, watching Roald Fox as a child, being not so much obsessed with him, but I think, wow, to watch Roald Fox, I was sort of in awe of him when I spoke to him. I was quite nervous. We've done interviews in the past, and I felt quite at ease, if I say. But Roald Fox, yeah, fantastic player, fantastic guest. I'd love to have him on again. We've done some great episodes. We've had some laughs. We've had some arguments. But, yeah, it's been really good. It's a difficult episode because we're doing it off the cuff. And it's really hard. Anything we've got wrong, people, please let us know.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.